As one of the biggest metro areas in the Western Hemisphere, Mexico City has a reputation that sets some Americans on edge. Coming up, a New Yorker who moved to Mexico City decades ago updates us on life in the big Mexican capital so that you can come to love it too. Berlin is another powerhouse city that won't disappoint. But sometimes you just want to get out on a day trip into nature and experience more of what's nearby. German guides propose great day trips from their capital. Let's start the hour with a guide to great literary adventures, the kind that can help us imagine life in cities all around the world and across the centuries. I'm a big believer in the more you take to your sightseeing, your travels, the more you get out of it. Enjoying a good book before heading off to Europe can enhance your experience. It can enhance it beautifully. Before heading out on a trip, that's what David Damrosch loves to do. He explores what great authors have written about the places he's visiting. During the pandemic, David's passion for literature from around the world turned into extensive armchair travels. As chair of the Department of Comparative Literature at Harvard University, David put together a list of 80 works that he recommends. Contemporary and classic writers who are the best at making foreign worlds come alive for us. He's written a kind of guide to this, and it's called Around the World in 80 Books. David joins us now for some advice on a few great books that'll take you to Europe, even from your own living room. David, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
So, as you write, we can travel to different times and different places in our imaginations with the help of books. During the pandemic, you found yourself doing a lot of reading. Tell us how that became the book you've just published, Around the World in 80 Books.
Well, I had the idea to write a book for general readers about the pleasures of reading world literature, which has opened up so much around the world in recent years. We're in a golden age of translation. So many good books are now available. So I was going to go to a bunch of places around the world that I had reason to go to and then talk about works there. And then came the pandemic, and rapid succession of plans were shut down in Tokyo and Serbia and places in between. And I thought, oh, I can't do the book. But then I thought, well, I have the books. So it was very therapeutic for me during the height of the pandemic to do this. And still now, so I go to Paris with five books in my mind. And I start with the one that's archetypal for me, Proust, Recherche, the In Search of Lost Time, which really introduced Paris to me before I was ever there. And it's still such a vivid portrayal of the city from one perspective.
What a blessing to be smart enough to be able to read these books and absorb them and then translate them into understanding of a culture you're visiting. I'm not very well read. And the books that I read are kind of pop literature, I would think. Well, tell me what you think, you know, because like when I go to Renaissance Florence and want to learn about Michelangelo, of course, I've read The Agony and the Ecstasy. And when I go to Ireland, of course, I've read Trinity by Leon Uris. These are romantic histories, and I find they just give me a wonderful feeling for what happened centuries ago in these fascinating corners. What's your take on just the pop, sort of low-hanging fruit of romantic literature?
Well, I feel very strongly that world literature should not just be something that you need a graduate degree from an Ivy League university to appreciate. That I think is very harmful. And one of the things I like about traditional Chinese and Japanese literature is the idea anyone should not only be a reader, but should be a poet. It's something that's just like breathing. It should be part of your life. And one thing that was important for me with these 80 books is it should include Dante and Proust, but it includes detective fiction as well. It includes books that I fell in love with as a child that introduced us to the world. The Voyages of Dr. Doolittle, One Morning in Maine by Robert McCloskey. I end with Tolkien's Lord of the Rings, which was a book I was obsessed by as a teenager, and I still teach today. The best-selling novel in history, 150 million copies sold, yeah. And it's a work of great literary value. And look how many people have found it accessible.
Oh, yeah. Well, I like to look at it as it's a practical investment. It's enjoyable to read a good book, but it's also a practical investment in time. If you are going to Europe and you wish you better understood the struggle of the Irish people, ancient Rome, Victorian England, the Holocaust, the Great Plague, what are some examples of books that you find accessible and at the same time really helpful in giving you an appreciation of something before you travel all the way there?
No, that's a really good point. And I should say that accessibility or the usefulness, the Roman poet Horace says that poetry should be dulce et utile, sweet and useful. And because he's a great poet, he puts the sweetness first. So for me, accessibility comes from falling in love with the work. Proust, I always thought, oh, it's this major monument. I'm going to have to invest my life or get a graduate degree to read the damn book. And then I opened it up at a certain point, and in the first three pages, I just was in love with it. And if I hadn't fallen in love with it, I would just put it aside and find something else. In terms of finding this, the place also, even works that seem distant can seem close. For the reading about Italy in the plague time, there's no better work than Boccaccio's Decameron. And if you read the frame story to the Decameron, you'd think you're reading the New York Times circa March of 2020. 100,000 people had died. The wealthy flee out of town to shelter in place at their country home and tell stories, while the poor in the city are dying in droves. Some people socially distant, other people couldn't care less, and they have parties, and they even more of them die, but they die either way. So here we have Boccaccio really telling us from 700 years ago, this is what it's like. Be aware of this. Prepare for this.
Wow, how poignant with what's happening right now.
And I follow him with Donna Leon by its cover, one of the Inspector Brunetti mystery stories in Venice. And I'm counterpointing that. And the plague that she sees is first rising sea levels, which is going to drown Venice, and second, tourism, which she describes as being like an epidemic and a plague. So you have these echoes back and forth, literal and metaphorical, from, you know, something written just a few years ago to something written hundreds of years ago.
So you've got, in your book, you've tackled different areas. You've got 16 different destinations. In Europe, you've got London, Paris, Krakow, Venice, Istanbul, and you have a collection of works, you know, five works from each of those cities. How does that ensemble tie together? It's almost like a literary itinerary or tour.
Very much. A lot of the fun was making these networks, seeing how they're talking to each other. So Virginia Woolf hates her rival Arnold Bennett, who's a less well-known figure today, but is a brilliant and successful, more successful than she was on the market. But they're both dealing with, for example, the traumas of World War I. They both have a character who's suffering from shell shock, whose bride is trying to help keep them from suicide. They're rewriting the same stories from completely different positions. So it's also so interesting to see how differently one city looks in different writers from the same moment at the same place.
This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're talking with literary historian David Damrosch, who founded Harvard University's Institute for World Literature. David's with us right now to recommend some of the greatest writing about many places in Europe that he profiles in his book. The book's called Around the World in 80 Books. It's his compilation of 80 exceptional books, classics and contemporary, from authors who shape our idea of the world through literature. David, you know, it's interesting if you think of the value or the importance of this writing. A lot of cities are actually becoming a destination to a certain degree because of a writer. I mean, so many people go to Dublin because of James Joyce. A lot of people go to the Lakes District because of Beatrix Potter. People go to London on the Sherlock Holmes trail because of Arthur Conan Doyle.
Right, one of my authors.
What's an example that you would remind us of the importance of an author that is even showing itself today in people's sightseeing priorities?
Well, I'd recommend Istanbul and reading Orhan Pamuk, Nobel Prize winning writer from Istanbul. He's become very, very closely identified with his city, and now a lot of people are going there because of his novels. And in fact, he has a recent novel from a few years back called The Museum of Innocence, which tells the story of a hero who's lost his love, and he builds a museum to her based on his own memories and daily life with her. And while Pamuk is writing this novel, he actually built a museum, the Museum of Innocence, and you can go there. And it's really great because if you go with a copy of the novel, that gets you in for free to his museum. So it's a very good marketing device. There's a little ticket and they stamp it. You can only do it once with your copy and only one per person. So if you go with your beloved, you have to take two copies, even better yet.
That is great. What a clever idea and what a way to enhance your experience in Istanbul.
And the museum is beautiful. There are signs all around leading you to the museum, and it's a museum to life in the 50s in Istanbul. It's fantastic.
You know, the great cities, you feature them, London, Paris, Venice, Florence. Give me a quick rundown. If I want to understand London better before my trip, what's a book you would recommend I read?
Well, I start with Mrs. Dalloway because it's one of my favorites, and it already shows London becoming the global city it is today. But you could also go, and I have an epilogue about, called The 81st Book, and I imagine a number of the great books about London today, Samuel Selvan, The Lonely Londoners, Zadie Smith, White Teeth. You can see London, and so I see, you know, I'm a sort of comparatist. If you read two books, it's four times better than reading one. So Wolf plus one of the contemporaries would be my suggestion.
Okay, and how about Florence?
For Florence, you really can't do better than Dante and Boccaccio. I'm very wedded to those, and they're again so accessible and so moving in great translations, of which there are like more every year. He's been very lucky in his translators.
This is Travel with Rick Steves. We've been talking with David Damrosch, and his book is Around the World in 80 Books, A Literary Journey. David, we're out of time, but I would just like to close with something that will inspire people who may never see themselves reading Dante or Boccaccio, that I'd like to hear from you a concrete example of how your travels enjoyed a whole new dimension because you read something that was appropriate before you got there.
Well, in Florence, if you go to the Duomo, you'll see these amazing frescoes of hell and redemption. And you'll see in the side a portrait of Dante himself. He's inscribed in the cathedral. It shows you how to understand that world. And if you go and then are reading, you can also go to the Paradiso pizza parlor just next to it. And while you're there, you should read some Dante. And if you even have a bilingual translation, you can read just a few lines and just how incredibly accessible he is. At one point, Dante is seeing Beatrice for the first time after many years. And he turns back to Virgil, his guide. He says, "Col quale il fantolin corre alla mamma," the way a little child hurries to its mommy. I don't think any vernacular writer had ever used a homely word so seriously before Dante.
That is beautiful. And to go to Florence and to go to the baptistry and to think, Dante was baptized right here.
Yep.
And then you look up at that vivid, horrifying hell scene that covers half of the ceiling in that baptistry, and you think of what Dante ended up writing and contributing to that culture. It's a fascinating way to give extra dimension to your travels.
Absolutely.
David Damrosch, thank you so much for sharing your passion for literature and reminding us that we can enhance our travel experience by bringing with us a good book. Take care. Thanks.
Thank you so much.
David tells us how the words of Marco Polo introduced Europe to the East. It's in an extra we've posted with this week's show at ricksteves.com/radio. We're at 877-333-RICK. German tour guides recommend their favorite day trips from Berlin next. And we'll get an update on life in Mexico City coming up on Travel with Rick Steves.